Well, hello everyone. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. I'm happy to have with me today Katie Floyd from the Mac Power Users podcast. Katie, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. Please tell us just a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the Mac Power Users podcast, if you will.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Mac Power Users is a podcast that I do with my co-host, David Sparks. We're over on the 5x5 network with a bunch of other excellent podcasts, so I suggest you check out not only our podcast, if you're not familiar with it, but a range of other excellent shows over there on 5x5. And Dave and I are both attorneys by day, but don't worry, Mac Power Users is not a legal show. And what we do is we do two types of shows on Mac Power Users. The first type of show we do, which is kind of more of our traditional show, is we focus on one topic covering the Mac, and typically we do it with more of a getting work done, productivity, how can you use your Mac more efficiently slant, because that's how we're interested in using our Macs, as people and professionals who actually use Macs to get work done. So that's one aspect of the show. And then the other thing we do, because it's boring to talk about ourselves all the time, is we do workflow shows where we bring in notables from the Mac community or interesting people who use Macs, and we ask them, how do you use your Mac to do interesting things? So in the past, we've talked to all kinds of interesting people from the Mac community, people like Andy Anatko, people like Jason Snell, and we've also tried to talk to people who compose music on their Mac, people who write and direct movies on their Mac. David Wayne recently was one of our workflow guests, and he's got a movie out now, Wanderlust. So we talk to people from all walks of life about how they use their Mac and how they use their Mac to get work done. So that's a little bit about Mac Power Users.
Excellent. And I think the Tech Doctor audience would particularly enjoy Mac Power Users because in some ways it's a bit similar to this podcast in the sense that we really talk about usually one topic in detail. We try to offer as much quality information as we can come up with so that people can make good decisions about things. And that's the reason that I asked you, Katie, to come here today is because I happened to see on Twitter that you purchased one of the new MacBooks that Apple just announced at its WWDC conference where it refreshed its line of laptops. And I began to think about maybe people are having trouble trying to differentiate between the different models because there were several new models. The MacBook Airs were refreshed and so were the MacBook Pros. And so I thought we would spend some time just talking about the differences and similarities between these various machines, giving people a chance to think about what they might want to purchase. I know I'm up for a new MacBook this fall. My MacBook 2009 MacBook Pro is just about to run out of its beloved AppleCare, and so it's time to think of purchasing the next one. At least that's what I've been promising myself that I'm going to do, so I anticipate sticking to that. But at any rate, I know that you are a careful purchaser of important items like computers. I listened to you go through building your home and buying computers and all the great things you've talked about over the years on the Mac Power Users podcast, so that's why I know you do your homework when it comes to these things.
Let me tell you a little bit about my history and how I got to this point, and maybe that will explain a little bit about my decision-making process, if that's a good place to start.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Back in the day, I was always a desktop person because I wanted to get the most bang for my buck. And back in the early 2000s, when the original titanium PowerBooks came out, 2001 maybe is when that was, is when I made the switch and said, no, notebooks are powerful enough that they're now going to be my primary machine. And from that point on, I've never looked back. A notebook has always been my primary machine because I've loved that portability and I've loved being able to take my machine with me and have my full setup right there and not being able to worry about syncing documents back and forth, which granted, many years ago, and even just a couple of years ago, was a lot harder than it is right now. Now we've got services like iCloud and Dropbox and even flash drives that we didn't have just a couple of years ago that made keeping your data in sync across multiple computers a lot more difficult. So, many years ago, I made the decision that a notebook was going to be my primary machine. And I think you're starting to see people now maybe making the decision back, well, maybe now I'll get a heavy-duty desktop machine and a less powerful notebook machine, because syncing is so much easier now than it was. I still have gone with a laptop as my primary machine. So I've always wanted to get a higher-end laptop, which would make you think that I would want like a high-end Retina MacBook Pro. But throughout, as I've started traveling more, you know, a couple of years ago as a student, and then through traveling and having to lug a laptop around a bit through work, obviously the iPad has changed that a little bit because I lug a laptop around a little bit less. I found that I've wanted my computer to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And what I would do is I would set up a separate display mouse and keyboard at home. So when I was home, this computer would a little bit be like in docked mode, and I would have the benefit of a beautiful cinema display and full keyboard and full mouse and the computer off to the side, but have the ability that all of my data was with me and I could grab it and go and have this lightweight machine. So probably my all-time favorite computer was the 12-inch PowerBook, which I think a lot of people say is their favorite computer if they've ever had that. And from there, I went to a MacBook, and then a 13-inch MacBook Pro when that came out, and loved the 13-inch MacBook Pro. And then the 13-inch MacBook Air, the 2010 edition, the one that actually got no moving parts, the solid-state hard drive, and the one that was really powerful, started coming out. And I made the switch to the 13-inch MacBook Air. And that's just been the best computer that I've ever owned, because even going from the 13-inch MacBook Pro to the 13-inch MacBook Air and shaving off a couple of pounds, I found that it made a world of difference for me in terms of, do I take the laptop off my desk or not? Now, obviously, if I went on a trip or something, I would take it, but I'm much more likely to pick up the Air and take it into the bedroom or take it into the kitchen or take it under the couch and just grab it and go to the coffee shop. Whereas even with the 13-inch MacBook Pro, as small as it was, that size was still a factor for me. So something about the Air form factor, even though I know it's a less powerful computer and I could, in some respects, if I'm going to soup it all out, get a little more bang from my buck by going to a MacBook Pro, something about the Air form factor has really grabbed hold with me.
Okay, so just to make sure that I understand, because there is a bit of a trade-off here. You went from a 13-inch MacBook Pro to the 2010 13-inch MacBook Air. Obviously, you gained some things. You got a lighter machine. You got an SSD, solid-state drive. And sounds like that in itself, the lighter and the drive, of course, made it faster and made you more inspired to pick it up and carry it around from room to room in your house, it sounds like. But you did give up some things. Did you miss the Ethernet? Did you miss the optical drive? Did you see any regret, any loss there?
I did give up some stuff. I gave up quite a few ports. You know, I gave up a FireWire 800 port. I gave up an Ethernet port. I gave up a optical drive, very notably. As for the optical drive, I did pick up one of those $79 external drives, and I haven't used it much. Occasionally, when installing some older software packages like Microsoft Office still comes on disk and a few other things, I have used that optical drive from time to time. So I think it is important to have an optical drive in your household. Now, if you have another Mac that has an optical drive, Apple is taking care of that because you can do the optical drive sharing. And the way that I've gotten around that is once I've taken my disks, I've just burned them to or ripped them to DVD images and stored them off on my Drobo. So once I've done that initial conversion, I never need to go back to the disk again, and I've just got the disk archived on my shelf somewhere. But I think if you are going to make the switch to a computer that doesn't have an optical drive, it's probably important that you either have that external drive or you have another Mac with an optical drive in the house somewhere, because you may find that you need an optical drive for some legacy software support, and even legacy, I mean like Microsoft Office 2011, unfortunately.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you need one very often, but when you need one, because if you are doing something that just requires you to get it off of a CD or DVD, you've got to find a way to do that. So it sounds like your point really is have a workaround. Either have the file stored somewhere else on a backup system so you don't have to actually access the physical CD, or spend the $79 perhaps, or get some sort of plug-in optical drive. Sounds like it's what you're saying.
Right. Or even, like I said, if you have another Mac in the house that does have an optical drive, you can do the optical drive sharing. And I think for very rare occasional use, that's going to be fine. The Ethernet port was missed a little bit, but not much. Maybe if you were doing that initial time machine backup, because I back up to a time capsule, it was probably missed when I was doing that. But not much. I restored my data from a super duper backup that I had on an external USB drive. And I have 802.11n Wi-Fi. Of course, there are some times when you would rather be plugged in, but with the 2010 and the 2011 MacBook Air, the Ethernet Wi-Fi, the Ethernet dongle that they give you is USB, and it's slower. Now, they've got a Thunderbolt adapter that I did go ahead and buy with the 2012 MacBook Air that is coming, so I did pick that up, and I think that's going to be used occasionally. So I didn't miss the Ethernet very much, but there are solutions for that. You know, now the Thunderbolt dongle, and I would really like to get one of those Thunderbolt displays at some point that has the Ethernet built in. But unfortunately, where my desk is situated right now, I actually don't have an Ethernet port coming to my desk, so I wouldn't really have a place to plug it in most of the time anyway.
So really, it sounds like basically you would say that you're okay with Apple's call to eliminate both of those, both the optical drive and the Ethernet port. I mean, the Ethernet port physically won't fit on these really thin machines. It's easy to understand how they decided to eliminate both of those. But there are reasonable, at least in my opinion, workarounds for both situations, and neither are really used all that often.
Right. Now, here's where the big trade-off came. Let's see. It was about 18 months ago, I would say October, November of 2010, when I bought what is my current, but as of tomorrow, won't be because my new MacBook Air is going to be delivered tomorrow.
How exciting. Yay.
The MacBook Air that I'm recording in front of right now was the top-of-the-line 13-inch MacBook Air that you could buy in 2010. And that is the 2.13 gigahertz Core 2 Duo model with 4 gigabytes of RAM and a 256 hard drive. And so I maxed that out. So even going from my 13-inch MacBook Pro at the time, which was about a year or so old, I was stepping down in processor speed. It was still a Core 2 Duo, but I was stepping down to, I think, from a 2.5 to a 2.13 Intel Core 2 Duo. And I would say for the first year or so of ownership, I did not notice at all that speed decrease because so much of what I was doing from day to day, this MacBook Air seemed blazingly fast and so much faster than my 13-inch MacBook Pro because of the SSD.
Yes.
And that was huge. Today, 18 months later, I am noticing a little bit of a bottleneck. 90% of what I do is plenty fast on this MacBook Air, and much faster than it was on my 13-inch MacBook Pro. But I'm noticing a little bit of a bottleneck in some of the higher-end things that I do. And I'll admit that I'm a bit of an edge case, but for example, I produce about an hour and a half to sometimes a little bit longer podcast every week. If I'm trying to do something else at the same time while I'm listening back to that podcast in GarageBand, if I'm trying to organize photos in iPhotos, or sometimes something even simple as loading a web page that may have some intensive graphics or something else that might be a little more processor intensive, or if my Time Machine backup kicks on, or if something else is going on in the background, I will get GarageBand will start to stutter. And that was really what made me go ahead and take the jump and buy this version MacBook Air. Is a couple of weeks ago, I was editing a podcast and I was in a time crunch and I was trying to get some photos edited for a special event, and it was just stuttering all over the place, and the photos were taking forever to edit, and the podcast was taking forever to edit because I was trying to multitask and my processor was just shooting through the roof and constantly pinging out at 100%, and I couldn't get it done. And I thought, you know, I'm at the limit of my processor speed here. And I was trying to go one more revision before upgrading to the MacBook Air because, although I know it may not be of particular interest to this audience, I was kind of hoping for a Retina display on this MacBook Air, and I think it will be at least a year before we see that. But, you know, I just decided I don't think I can go another year with the Core 2 Duo processor in my current MacBook Air, so I decided to take the leap this year.
Katie, what is the difference between your 2010 MacBook Air and the one that you're going to be getting tomorrow?
Biggest difference, I think, for me is going to be the processor difference. The one that I'm getting tomorrow, I did up the processor to a 2 gigahertz dual-core Intel Core i5, which I understand is going to be more, from the benchmarks, it should be more than double and sometimes close to triple the speed boost of what I'm seeing. It's a higher-level Intel graphics card. The model that I'm getting tomorrow is an Intel HD Graphics 4000. And I've doubled my RAM from 4 to 8 gigs. Now, I did not do the additional upgrade because it was quite expensive to go from 256 to 512 of storage. I just haven't found that. I've got a Drobo FS connected to my network here, and all of my large files and all of my archive files live on that. So I found that the 256 SSD has been more than adequate for my needs here.
Yeah, I was just looking at my hard drive here on my 2009 MacBook Pro, and I've got everything that I typically carry around on it, and I'm only using about 150 gigs. So, I mean, a 256 gig SSD, I don't think would be a problem at all for me either.
128 would have been too tight. I would have either had to have sacrificed my full iTunes library or my full iPhoto library, and that would have been difficult.
It sounds like, from what you're telling me, that the new MacBook Air that's now available in the Apple stores and online, from what you've just said, it's quite configurable.
Well, you can, but this is the kicker, is you have to configure it when you buy it. Technically, anything is possible. It could possibly be configured after the fact, but it requires some soldering and some things that I do not recommend anybody do. The MacBook Air is not designed to be opened by a consumer, so do not plan on doing any upgrades to the MacBook Air. So you really need to configure it when you order it from Apple. So it starts with the baseline. The first decision you have to make with the MacBook Air is 11 or 13 inch. I have been so tempted to go to the 11 inch because I really noticed, remember I said I noticed a huge jump in my usage just going from the 13 inch Pro to the 13 inch Air. Yes. And I've always wondered, oh, what if I went 11 inch? Would it jump even more, you know? But I've just been nervous. You know, the 11 inch just makes me a little nervous. Is it going to be just a little too small of a screen when I use it every day? But for this audience, 11 inch is going to give you a huge jump in portability, and it's quite configurable. The 11 inch is a amazingly powerful machine. So I think that's something to be considered.
So how is the 11 inch different from the 13 inch MacBook Air?
You can configure the 11. I mean, obviously physical size is one, but you can configure the specs in terms of processor, memory, and storage almost all the way up the same as to the MacBook, the 13-inch model. So the 11-inch, the low end starts at 64 gigs of storage, which personally I think is too small. I would recommend that you at least go with 128 gigs at an absolute minimum. And it starts at a 1.7 gigahertz dual-core Intel Core i5 processor. And so I think that in terms of everyday use, including editing audio and even, you know, word processing and browsing and whatever you want to do, general everyday use, as long as you're not doing HD video editing on a regular basis and things like that, I think an 11-inch MacBook Air, assuming you upgrade the hard drive a bit, at least to 128, is going to be in a fine computer in terms of horsepower for people. So the low end starts with 64 gigs, 4 gigabytes of memory, and a 1.7 gigahertz Core i5, and that's at $999. And if you bump it up to $1,100, you can get a 128 gigabyte hard drive with the same specs, which I think is a worthwhile upgrade. And then it's configurable from there. You can, you know, for an extra $150, you can go up to a little faster processor, which is a 2 gigahertz Core i5. Now, the speed tests that I've seen say that adds about 10% in terms of raw performance. So you can decide whether, you know, a $150 upgrade to a $1,100 machine for a 10% speed boost makes sense. If you're going to regularly be doing a lot of work, you may want to consider adding the additional memory. I think that is an upgrade that makes sense. Upgrading from 4 gigs to 8 gigs is only $100, and you can't do it after the fact. So that is one that makes sense. Where you start getting into a bit more expensive money is upgrading the flash. You know, going up from even 128 to 256 is going to add you $300, and then 256 to 512 goes up another $500 from there. So that's where you're really spending your money, and that's the 13-inch model start at higher levels. The 13-inch model, I think, starts at 128 and then goes to 256.
So I'm not doing all this math in my head, unfortunately.
Right.
But let's just take me, for example. If I know for sure that I would want 8 gigs of RAM, and I would want 256 gigs of flash, and I would want the better processor.
Then to get into an 11-inch model, you're starting at $1,650 for an 11-inch model. To get into a 13-inch model, if you want the 8 gigs of RAM, and to get into a 13-inch model, you're going to have to configure the higher-end 13-inch model. The lower ends aren't as configurable as the higher-end models. So to get into a 13-inch model, you're going to be at $2,100.
So really, when you look at it like that, and we haven't talked about it yet, but we will in more detail in a minute. But really, when you get up around $2,100, same price as the base model of the new MacBook Retina display.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I think I may have told you wrong. Did you say you wanted 256 or you wanted 512?
256.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then a 13-inch model will get you for $1,700.
Okay, so for about $1,700, I could get a 13-inch. The Retina machine, which is basically configured the same way, maybe with a bit better processor, but it comes with 8 gigs of RAM and a 256 gig SSD at its base model for, I believe it's $2,199 or $2,195, something like that.
$2,199, right.
Yeah, $2,199. So you're going to pay about $500 more for that Retina display model, which in my mind is roughly configured in a very similar manner to that high-end 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Well, and in that case, you're getting much more processor power because you're getting a 2.3 gigahertz quad-core Intel processor instead of just a dual-core processor.
Yes, and I don't know. Like you, I edit lots of podcasts, and so that's something that I do on a regular basis. Unlike you, I don't typically try to do much multitasking when I'm editing the podcast, because all my multitasking is all done in some form in audio, and it's hard to do that while you're editing something using the audio.
Right.
But nonetheless, I also, like you, Katie, am happy to admit that I'm pretty much a geek who wants the very best machine I can possibly afford. And that really makes it a tough decision because, yes, it's true that, you know, $500 is $500, and that has to be considered. But, you know, it's just hard to decide how much of a better computing experience or how much of a better machine you're really getting for that price, or would it really make much difference?
Well, to me, in terms of my usage, I think there's no question there's more bang for the buck, so to speak, going with the Retina display model because you get a significantly faster processor. I would up it to 16 gigs of RAM, and I spent $1,700 plus on my totally maxed out MacBook Air. And I would be getting more bang for my buck with the lower end, slightly specced out MacBook Pro model, and probably have a machine that would last me and have a little bit longer useful life. But I'm also adding, you know, almost 2 more pounds and quite a bit of size to this machine. So am I actually going to use this machine as much as I would use my MacBook Air? And to me, that was really the decision factor, is do I want to go back to a 15-inch notebook again? And I don't think I did.
Yeah, that's part of the question, really, is, you know, for me, again, I have no real need for the 15-inch machine, but at this moment, it's definitely the most powerful machine that Apple is making right now.
I think you also have to look at what is your upgrade cycle. I used to be someone that regularly kept machines for 2.5 to 3 years. My general policy is I would try to sell them within a couple of months of AppleCare coming up so that I could sell them to somebody with a couple of months of AppleCare remaining, knowing that if something went wrong, they would at least have a couple of months of AppleCare coverage and it wouldn't immediately come back to me of, oh, you sold me a lemon. So that was typically my policy, is I would usually upgrade at about the 2.5 to 2.75 year mark. Lately, since I've been doing the podcasting thing and since I felt that I've had to be more on top of Apple technology and more on the bleeding edge, I've been more on an 18-month upgrade cycle. And so if I were sticking with my 2.5 to 2.75 year upgrade cycle, I think it would make more sense to go with a higher-end computer because you know you're going to get more of a useful life out of this machine and you're going to get more bang for your buck out of that machine. And it's going to cost you more up front, but it's going to have a longer useful life. Depending on what you do with the machine and how processor intensive and the types of tasks that you're using for it, anybody can get 3 to 5 years out of any of the current Mac lines if they're using it for basic word processing, web browsing, email, you know, basically all of the general everyday tasks. You know, not everybody edits podcasts, not everybody edits video, not everybody Right. has all of these specialized tasks that that some of the, let's call them power users, do with their Macs. Many people, you know, I run a local Mac user group. Many of my users are using 5 and 7 year old hardware. I mean, try doing that with a PC.
Yes, the Macs do really hold up well, and they last a very long time. I think for me, at least at this point, I'm more like you used to be. I'm more on that three-year upgrade cycle. About the time AppleCare is running out is about the time I'm thinking, okay, I'm ready to upgrade this machine to the next model. So right. I suspect, Katie, you're probably right. You know, again, if you're listening and you're someone like me who upgrades maybe every three years, typically, the higher end machine in some ways might be more bang for your buck. And you're also right in that you definitely do not want to under configure that machine at the time that you buy it, because you can't go back and do it later. Go ahead and spend the money, in my opinion, and get everything that you think you're going to need in terms of RAM and disk space and all that to last you for the next 3-4 years, because that's kind of the way it seems like you need to buy these machines these days.
Right. Now, there's another option we haven't talked about yet, and that is the non-Retina MacBook Pros that are probably not too long for this world. Because Apple has certainly signaled that they're going in the range of Retina machines, but they're still here and they still serve a purpose. My younger brother is getting ready to move and go start a job a couple hours away, and he's got an old PC that he used throughout college and that really needs an upgrade, and he's going to be upgrading to a Mac, and cost is an issue for him. And he wants, if he goes with a notebook, he knows that he wants an Apple notebook and he wants a 15-inch notebook because he's a gamer. And he knows that he wants at least a 15-inch screen, but cost is a factor. And that Retina display definitely adds a cost. So I have encouraged him that if he decides to go with a notebook, look at one of the MacBook Pros, the current generation MacBook Pros, or in the refurb store for one of the last generation MacBook Pros at a bit of a discount. Those are still excellent machines.
Yes, they are. Now, I know that the MacBook Pros that you're talking about are the ones that still have the spinning hard drives, and they still have, I believe, the CD drives as well, the optical drives. What did Apple do for those particular machines this time in the refresh? How are they different than last year's models?
They basically got speed bumps. So they got a little bit faster processors, a little bit better graphics, and that's about it. They basically got speed bumps. But the beauty about those machines, especially if you're someone who keeps machines for a while, is they're still going to be upgradable to some extent. It's not horribly difficult to, with assistance, swap out a hard drive and change out RAM and do things like that. So if you're someone like my brother who tends to keep their machines for 4 or 5 years and more, it would make sense. Go ahead and buy what he can afford now, when I would tell him to try to lean towards getting a higher level processor and look at something from the refurb store. And, you know, maybe for Christmas his sister will buy him some RAM from OWC or something. And
what a nice sister. Wow.
Maybe, you know, and maybe next year, in a year and a half or so, maybe he can look at getting an SSD drive or something like that, and really extending the life of that machine, because they are still upgradable. There is no getting into these MacBook Airs or those MacBook Pros with Retina displays.
Right, exactly. And it's an excellent point. Some people like to buy their machines and gradually upgrade as time goes on. And I suspect, and I have no inside information, but I'm guessing that day is likely coming to a close as far as Apple machines go, when they have all Retina displays on all their machines. I think we're going to see these solid state drives and probably less upgradability on, right, at least on your own after the fact.
So if
you want to buy a machine that you can upgrade, these current MacBook Pros that still have the platter hard drives are a viable option. It's a good point. But they did not lower the prices on those, did they?
If they did, it wasn't much. To be honest, I haven't followed the prices on those because I've never really been interested in them. So they start at $17.99 and go up to $21.99, and you can figure from there.
Right.
So the higher end 15-inch MacBook Pro is the same price point as the low-end 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display. And at that point, I think it just makes sense to go to the Retina display model.
To me, it seems like Apple really priced that Retina MacBook Pro pretty aggressively, because when you get to that point, most people would probably think, well, I'll just buy that one. You know, I mean,
right,
because you're talking about the same amount of money, essentially. I mean, unless you really were wanting to upgrade it, or unless you really needed that, that CD drive, optical drive built in, or unless you really needed a built-in Ethernet port, for example, then you would probably, you know, for the same money, get one of the other machines. But the new MacBook Pro Retina is going to be thinner and lighter.
It is going to be thinner. It's I don't know how much lighter it is. It's a little bit lighter. It's lighter. It is, let's see.
Maybe not enough to just determine whether it's going to break your back or not.
Yeah, the 15-inch model MacBook Pro is 5.6 pounds. And the Retina display models, I think, are about a pound lighter.
Yeah, about 4-something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So it's a little bit lighter. And of course, you're right. The MacBook Airs are so much lighter than that all these things really have to be considered. For me, again, personally, and I know for a lot of people who are blind or visually impaired, we end up carrying a lot of stuff around. We typically have a computer and maybe some sort of external braille device and maybe other things that I know for me, I work as a psychologist, but I feel a little bit like a college student trotting off to work every day with my backpack, because
right,
I carry a backpack full of technology around. And yeah, you know, I'm a little excessive. I have my Jawbone Jambox speaker and blah, 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 and everything else I like to carry around. But this lightness of computer really can make a big difference when you're trying to make a decision like this.
Well, if screen size isn't an issue, I think that 11-inch MacBook Air is pretty compelling.
Yeah, especially, And I didn't realize this until you mentioned it, and I'm glad we talked about it, especially when you realize how configurable it is. Now, it is going to end up costing you a fair amount more money. That $9.95 price is going to pretty quickly disappear from the radar as you configure it more. But even so, once you get it configured and spend that money, you've got a very nice, small, light package that's just really full of goodies, it seems like.
Well, I'll tell you, for most people, I don't think, and you may be the exception, but I think for most people, I don't think that the processor upgrade from the 1.7 gigahertz to the 2 gigahertz is going to make a bit of a difference. All of the benchmarks we've seen in that is that it's about a 10% or less speed boost. And for $150 that it adds to the price, you know, then you start doing some math and going, gosh, I'm paying $150 for a 10% increase. You know, that's X percentage of the overall price. So if you take that out of the equation, I think the 8 gigabytes of RAM is a good upgrade. You know, going from 128 to 256 is a good upgrade. If you take that out of the equation, you know, now you're only down to $1,500.
Yeah, which is probably a pretty good price for what you're getting for that amount of money.
Yes.
Do you know, Katie, offhand, whether the keyboards are the same on the 13 and 11-inch MacBook Airs? Is there any
difference? They are. They are identical, and the difference really between the 13 and this 11 is the trackpad is obviously a little bit smaller because the physical size of the machine is smaller, but they did not sacrifice keyboard size.
So that's important for people to note. And honestly, you know, for a person who is blind or significantly visually impaired and not really going to be worrying about staring at the screen all day long, you're really making a pretty convincing case for that 11-inch MacBook Air.
I am intrigued by the 11-inch MacBook Air. I really wish that I could like rent one for a month and try it out, because I'm about 60% convinced that I could switch to one, but I'm not quite convinced enough to spend $1,500 on one.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're just a little bit afraid that you would really miss that 13-inch screen.
Right, because there is a fair amount of time that I am just using my MacBook Air either at my desk at the office or at the coffee shop or, you know, wherever.
I think we've done a pretty good job, albeit in a bit of a roundabout way, of covering the differences in these machines. You know, I had in my mind we would go in order, and you know, but it never quite works out that way when you do a podcast. But is there anything, as we kind of start to wrap up here, that you can think of that we have neglected, that we've missed? I think we've compared them and contrasted them pretty well.
The only other thing I would bring up is if cost is an issue, a couple of things I would suggest that you look at. Number one, if you are an educator, if you are affiliated with an educational institution, or if you're a student, you may want to look and see if you qualify for educational pricing through Apple, because right now they've got a great deal going on. You can save a couple of bucks, both off of the base price of the computer and off of some of these upgrades, and I think get a $50 or $100 gift card towards apps, which is nice. So that may be something to look at. If cost is a factor, although I believe that the 2012 MacBook Airs especially are a significant bump from the 2010 models, again, the benchmarks look like they're a speed bump from the 2011 models. There's some great deals on that Apple refurbish store. I have not seen any 2012 MacBook Air models on the refurb store. It's just a matter of time. The refurb store is one of my favorite places to buy computers. If the model that you're looking for is available, usually it takes about 3 to 6 months for them to start showing up there. So if you want the latest and greatest, it's not going to be there. But I love buying. I like deals, so I like buying machines there. And if you're looking at just stock configurations, if you're not going to be adding a lot of stuff, Amazon is a great place to buy. And I actually bought my last computer, the computer that's being shipped to me, I bought it from MacMall and was able to get a little bit of a discount, and they had a deal going with my credit card company that I was able to get some bonus points and things like that. So you may want to look at other places to buy other than direct from Apple. I don't have an Apple store in my town. The nearest one's about 2 hours away. Otherwise, I would have run in and bought one right away.
Yeah, well, that's great information. And just to let people know, Apple does really offer the same kind of support and, I believe, warranty options on the refurb computers. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, it's the full one-year warranty, and they are eligible for AppleCare. And
yeah.
So I'm still a big fan of AppleCare.
I am too, especially on the, well, I now have AppleCare on everything. So yes, I'm a big fan of AppleCare. And I think people really would want to consider the refurb possibilities because those machines have really been gone through and they come to you, and at least from what I've been told, in really great shape and really like new machines pretty much.
Yeah, occasionally or most of the time they come to you just in plain brown boxes as opposed to the shiny boxes. Sometimes you get the shiny new boxes. But whenever I've bought a refurb from Apple, I've never been able to tell that the machine was anything other than brand new.
Yeah, great. Well, that's really good information for people to have. And Katie, I so much appreciate you being here and help us work our way through these different machines. I think this will be really informative for people, and I guess we'll call it a wrap at this point. Don't want to keep you too much longer on this Sunday morning, but thank you so much again for doing this. I do appreciate it.
Great. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Well, you all be sure and check out the Mac Power Users podcast. And if you want to get in touch with me here at the Tech Doctor, as always, you can email techdoctor123@gmail.com. So long for now.